I'm Grace, the Amy Santiago of Royal Bloggers.
And I'm Jessica, the Dorothy Sporanath of Royal Bloggers.
And we'd like to welcome you to On Air, the podcast where two cynical Brits discuss the latest royal news and the truth behind the stories. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the On Air podcast.
That was very enthusiastic.
I know. I was like, hello! I hope you've all had a lovely week. We thought this week we would leave Britain for a bit, give us a break, and head over towards Scandinavia for the first part of the episode. This past week was the Nobel Prize ceremonies, which took place in Norway and Sweden.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't know what the Nobel Prizes are, they are awards that are given out to, I think this is a quote, those who have conferred the greatest benefit to humankind, which, I mean, it's a big brag. and it's across five categories. So physics, chemistry, physiology or medicine, literature and peace. Economics is added later on. It is considered a Nobel Prize, but it's not awarded by the legacy of Alfred Nobel. Anyway, that's a different conversation. They take place largely in Sweden. The Peace Prize takes place in Norway. Because Alfred Nobel was a Swedish scientist, and it's his legacy that makes up the prize money for the Nobel Prize, which is a cool $1 million.
You know what? When I was younger, I would have been like, wow. And now I'm older, I'm like, I could do with a bit more.
Yeah, I can't retire on $1 million.
Let's start upping these prize winnings, yeah. Please.
Yeah, and so yeah, as Grace said, it's a very prestigious prize anyway for scientists and whatnot, but we're not really scientists or whatnot. So for us, it's widely considered kind of the most important formal event in the Swedish royal family's calendar, and one of the most important events in the Norwegian royal family's calendar as well. So yeah, so they have like prize ceremony, and then they have a dinner thing afterwards, and then on the 10th and on the 11th they have like the king hosts his own dinner. That has not happened yet as of a time of recording, so we're just focusing on the first set of things that happened. Yes, so shall we start off with Sylvia? So Queen Sylvia, Queen of Sweden, she wore the Napoleonic amethyst tiara, so that's amethysts. We will post pictures if you go to the description of the episode under links, there will be pictures of all of the gowns and things if you haven't seen them already. So she wore the amethyst tiara, and she matched it with a very sort of vibrant purple gown. Don't really know much about shades of purple. This isn't fuchsia, is it? That's more pink.
Yeah, it was very, like, I don't think royal purple is a colour, but I would describe it as, like, if you were imagining, like, a medieval king in purple, it was that shade.
It was very purple, with, like, lace and sort of satin. It was, yeah, very sort of classic Sylvia. So, I'll go with the tiara first.
Yeah.
The Napoleonic amethyst is not my favourite tiara because it's basically a circle. It's more like a crown almost, really, than a sort of traditional tiara, if you think about tiaras in your head. So it's quite difficult to wear. But I will say Sylvia has been wearing it for so long that she kind of knows exactly how to place it.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to the Tiara Mania blog, because yes, I get all of my tiara information from there. But yeah, she kind of, the amethyst tiara was originally a necklace, which became a tiara, which I think makes a lot of sense when you look at it. And like you said, I think Sylvia's managed to kind of perfect the art of placement on her head, because she does do it perfectly. But I always think this is one of the only tiaras that I think really suits people with their hair down.
It does, yeah.
I think it's probably because it's that circle, so it goes around the back of the head as well. I've seen, you know, a lot of the younger royals I've definitely seen wearing it, like Madeline and Sophia and Vic, with their hair down. And I think Madeline in particular really suits the tiara, but I think because it goes around the back, when they've got updos and Sylvia's got like a bouffant, you know, it feels almost like it's kind of perched if they've got something big on the head. So, I mean, it looked good on her, and she placed it well, and I like the fact she went all out with the amethyst, and she had the matching necklace that was from the bracelets and the brooch and everything. But I don't feel like it's her tiara.
Yeah, so the Swedish royal family are a bit more sherry than others. There are some things that tend to be only for the queen, or only, you know, their personal property of somebody, so they're only worn by one person. But there's quite a few that are generally shared out and worn by anybody, pretty much. And the amethyst is one of those that's shared out. So we've seen it on a few people. And I do agree, Madeline, when she had her darker hair and she wore it at the back of the head, looked absolutely stunning. I think tiaras, it's not about whether it's an updo or a down, or down-do is not a word. or sort of loose hair. It should be. I think it's about like what works with each tiara, and when they're quite intricate, an updo is better because from the front the focus is just on the intricacy and the sort of beauty of the tiara. So with this one, it does really work with loose sort of simple hair, but just because of the placement of it, and because it's not sort of something that you have to, there's a feature at the front that you're supposed to be looking at. So it does, you know, it does really work with that. So I wouldn't say it's the best tiara on Sylvia. I like her big ones because she's one of the few who can pull them off. But it looked lovely.
Yeah, she looked, you know, and I think having all of the jewels kind of, because amethysts are quite, I don't know if they're quite dark or if it's just in the photos, but in my head, amethysts are quite dark. So having all of the amethyst kind of really brought the colours out a bit more than it does when it's just the tiara.
And it matched with the dress really well, because it wasn't the exact same shade for the dress, but it was close enough that it wasn't distracting. And all in all, it was kind of like very classic Sylvia.
Yeah, which is kind of what made it so weird that I didn't like the gown at all.
Oh, really?
It's so Sylvia. And I think it's because it was like all lace on the top. And then obviously it went into the skirt, which was kind of satiny. But then sort of in the middle, there was like a panel of lace. Go all out lace or don't.
It was kind of like the base dress was lace, and then they put like a satin skirt around it that only went halfway. Like a backwards apron, it's kind of like.
The colour looked so good on her. And I think I was like, oh, I really like it. And then I looked at the skirt and I was like, oh, no, I don't. I don't like it. Sylvia, no.
I might just be biased because I really like Sylvia, and I think she always looks so elegant. But I think it's definitely, I don't want this to sound disparaging, but it's definitely like an older woman's gown.
Yeah, like I could see it on Sonia or Camilla.
I won't remember this gown in 5 or 10 years, but I probably won't remember it next year. but I did think she looked lovely, but I also am probably quite biased because I just like everything she wears, because she's just so elegant.
I think it's really easy because she does wear really big tiaras and really big gowns,
yeah,
to be kind of swamped in them, but she doesn't, which I think is a talent.
Mm-hmm.
I would get swamped easily.
And so then we go on to Crown Princess Victoria. This is quite interesting because normally so we write our notes separately, and we might be like, oh, how did you structure them, but we try to surprise each other. But when it comes to fashion, I feel like one of us will usually message the other one being like, oh my god, this is so hideous, I can't wait for us to talk about it. But I actually have no idea how you feel about any of these.
I know, I was like, oh, I'll keep it a surprise.
Yeah, so it's exciting. So I'll start off with the tiara. She wore the 6-button tiara, which I do not like. It always reminds me of antenna.
I think when I first saw the pictures, I went, oh no. Kind of, I don't hate the 6-button tiara when it's worn well, and it needs a lot of kind of like hair behind it, which I think Victoria just about pulled off. And I think it could have done with a bit more kind of like volume behind it, but I think it did just about work.
She did wear it well. The Swedish royal family, their hairdressers, people who are in charge of the jewellery, they're definitely probably the best at managing tiaras out of all of the royal families, because they always place tiaras really, really well.
You know, we'll talk about the dress more in a minute, but I think because the dress had a sort of a lower neckline, the fact it's quite a, almost like a, it's a really tall, weird antennary tiara, it looked better than if it was a really sort of high-necked, frilly number.
Well, actually, let's get onto the gown then. So she wore a pink gown by Camilla Thulin. I don't know if it's Thulin or Thulin. I did this mistake before and I still didn't bother to look it up. So I'm really sorry, Camilla, who's a regular designer for Victoria. She wears Camilla's stuff quite a lot. I liked this.
So did I.
Yay!
I liked it. I just saw everyone being mean about it. And I was like, no, you always said you liked Kate's hideous dress last week. What are you
yeah.
on about?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've got a list of everyone who praised that dress. And anyone who says anything about Victoria now, I'm like, I'm sorry, but I cannot take you seriously. I don't think this is one of the ones that I will think of as like iconic Victoria at the Nobel Prize gowns. So it's not my favorite thing that she's ever worn. But I mean, firstly, I think I've talked about this before, but the gown was pink and the sashes and everything for the Swedish royals. So the Order of the Seraphim and the Royal Family Order from the King, they're all a pale blue. And I love that that color combination of pale pink and pale blue. I have always loved it.
Very sort of natural color combination, like a baby shower for twins.
It's very baby shower chic, but I just have always loved that color combination. I mean, I maybe would have made this dress one shade lighter, but I think that it worked really well. And she also had a necklace, which she's had since she was a teenager, which has alternating pink and blue stones. And we haven't seen that for many, many years. So, you know, it was tied together really, really well.
Yeah, I think the color was like really lovely. I think with pink, particularly if you're gonna do pink in a gown, go into the kind of like sickly sweet vibes really easily. You know, she's quite tan and it really sort of suited her and her skin tone and the sort of accessories she wore with it. And on camera it looked great. In photographs it didn't look quite as good, and I think it's because the camera flashes sort of shifted the tone of it and made it look a bit garishly salmon. But I'm trusting the video footage rather than the camera footage. And in those video, you know, in the actual video live streams, it looked lovely.
Definitely, definitely, I agree. I also thought like the silhouette. So I saw some photographs that Camilla had posted of like the gown being constructed, and the silhouette was really classic. It kind of, when I saw the construction of it, it reminded me a lot of like a gown that Princess Margaret would have worn in the 1960s. It also reminded me a lot of Kate's Philippa Lepley dress, which she wore yes. in the Caribbean earlier this year, which is, again, another reason why I'm like, if you praised that dress, this is very, very similar. So watch yourself.
Yeah, I think it could easily, like, it felt like a dress that is a gown, obviously, but like it could become a cocktail dress or, yes. a, you know, just by shortening the skirt. And you know, like, so the silhouette was lovely. I loved the neckline because it was a V. It wasn't like a proper deep V. And it was kind of like all ruffly, scrunched up, crisscrossy. I don't know how to describe dresses.
Yeah, it's like a ruching.
Yeah, in the bodice. And I think because it's such as there's no like embellishments on the dress. It's not, you know, lace or jewels or anything or patterned. And it just, that gave it something kind of a bit of a sort of pizzazz to it, because you're like, oh, I like that. And then it goes into this simple skirt, which I think, you know, suited her and suited the event really well. And my only issue was the fact that it, because of the material, it looked a little bit creased, and I just wanted to be like, steam it. Steam the creases out at the bottom.
Yeah, just have somebody with a steamer like huddled in the hallway before you go into the building.
Just steaming around the ankles.
Yeah, yeah. It's not one I'm going to rave about for years to come, like the red gown that she wore for the Nobel Prize, which is actually fairly similar, but was just iconic, or the duvet dress that everyone hates except for me. But, you know, it's not one of those, but I think she looked very beautiful and it was a good dress, and I don't really understand the level of some of the negativity I've seen.
It's a lovely dress, unlike other dresses we might mention.
I'm already sensing that we're on the same page about this.
Yes, let's get to Sophia.
So she wore her wedding tiara, unsurprisingly, because she wears nothing but her wedding tiara these days. It's so annoying because at the start she wore her wedding tiara for a few things, and then she had an explosion of wearing different tiaras from the family, and then it was kind of like she wore them all and was like, I don't like any of these, and just went back to her wedding one. I think it's boring. Like, it is boring that she wears her wedding tiara so often. It's not my favorite tiara anyway. It's fine, it's nice enough, but it's not very interesting. I will say she gave us a new setting. So the tiara has little stones at the top and those can be switched out, and this is the fifth setting she's worn. So this was, I think, topaz.
Yes, topaz.
I do appreciate the flexibility of this tiara, because I can see, like, she can wear it one day with rubies, or she could wear it with sapphires, or with all sorts of exciting things. So I do appreciate that she's at least trying to make a repeated boring tiara feel fresh by giving us a new setting, but it is still a bit boring.
I mean, I didn't mind the topaz. It wasn't my favourite, because they looked quite translucent.
Yeah, it's a bit of a non-stone, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it felt like blobs. It felt kind of like, you know, like when you get a blob of sort of glue on the end of something. Felt a bit like that. But then I realised I was looking at all the different settings of the tiara, and I realised my favourite one was the one where there was no extra stones, and it was just like the pointy bits. And I think, you know, I really liked it when she wore the kind of the cut steel sort of bandeau, and I think she needs to go back to the kind of like rusticky, spiky, edgy ones, because they suit her really well. It blended, like, you could see it in the pictures, but it blended in. And, you know, if you were in the room, you wouldn't have been like, wow, look at those topazes over there.
Don't even know what a topaz is. I would have said it was aquamarine until somebody said it was topaz.
Yeah, I really liked it, because when she first sort of appeared with the tiara, everyone was like, wow, she's wearing this brand new jewel. And everyone was saying completely different ones. And then eventually everyone was like, oh, it's topaz. We knew it was topaz. We all knew that. Big fan of the topaz.
We haven't had the Nobel Prize with tiaras since 2019. And they did not give me the full tiara experience I wanted. But anyway, the gown was from Ida Lanto, who is a Swedish designer that Sofia, again, has worn a lot. They kind of seem to have gone with their tried and tested designers. I don't even know how you describe it.
Like a full ball gown in this kind of sheer-esque netting. And then right at the bottom, there was this really thick hemline. And then at the cuffs and around the neck, someone had paper mache flowers on, which I'm sure they were very delicately and beautifully created, but did not look like that in any way, shape or form. It did look like someone had gone like, oh no, I've dropped my confetti and I just put a load of hot glue here and the confetti's got stuck. I'm going to have to make it part of the dress now.
I like the idea, but the fabric kind of looks like synthetic and like cheap, and I'm sure it wasn't, but it kind of, it does, and I think that makes it look poorly constructed. It seems ridiculous to me to be like, it's so poorly constructed, when I couldn't even sew a button on. But it just, maybe less of a high neckline, or the flowers to be at the bottom, I don't know. It just feels like it wasn't, the fabric choice wasn't right, and the construction of it wasn't quite right, and it just, I don't know, it was not great.
Yeah, when I first saw it in pictures, and it was kind of a blurry one, I was like, oh, I love that. It was like, I could see this kind of like ruffling around the neck on one side, and these really sort of pale sheer sleeves, and that was all I could really see, and I thought, that's really nice actually. And then I saw a full length photo and I was like, take that back. Sofia really suits like jewel tones, like really deep colours, but she also suits these really icy colours. So the colour should have been brilliant, and there were all these parts that should have worked together, but I think it was like the neckline was too high and the skirt was too long, and the whole dress looked a little bit big. And I don't know whether it was just the sleeves looked really baggy, but they didn't look baggy enough to be intentional. And in the kind of bodice, the darts in the bodice came to a point at a inconvenient place in said bodice.
That's a pet peeve of mine.
Drew my eye straight away. It's like, that is not the look you want to go for. Yeah, and then I don't quite know what was going on the bottom of the dress. Like, I mean, I know you have to sew a seam, but people manage to sew illusion seams all the time, and clearly I it almost feels like, and I'm sure she didn't, I'm sure this is all intentional, but it feels like Ida Lanto ran out of time and was like, look, I can't be bothered to do a tiny seam, so we're going to do a great big massive one and pretend it's intentional.
It's almost like she was going to wear something else, and then, I don't know, one of her kids got chocolate on it, and so she had to frantically go to Ida Lanto and was like, do you have anything that could work? And so they're like, right, well, this is made for somebody who's a bit shorter than you, but we can add a bit on the bottom, stick some flowers on so that people don't think it was last minute, and then that's the dress.
Yeah, I'm looking at kind of full-length pictures, and on the train there are more of the flowers, and I almost feel like if they got rid of the flowers on the neckline and on the sleeves,
yeah,
then you'd have a really simple dress with this kind of like elegant sort of background.
My last thought about the Nobel Prize and the fashion and everything was, I miss Princess Madeleine. She wears tiaras so well. And it's a shame because a few years ago, even though she was living overseas, she would come back. You knew she would come back for Victoria's birthday and for the Nobel Prize because it's the biggest event of the year. And she's not doing that anymore. And obviously there was the pandemic for 2 years, but she's not here this year. So I think this might be a thing that she's just not going to come back for the Nobel Prizes anymore. And I think that would be a real shame because she always does bring something, you know, even if I don't necessarily like what she's wearing, she brings something.
Yeah, she pulls off tiara so well, and her gowns have always been my favorite. Even if I don't, you know, like the gown, I like her in the gown. Like she elevates a really simple gown to something quite special. And I also think she's in a position now where she could wear something completely kooky and get away with it because they'll be like, oh, it's only Madeleine. Like Victoria, you know, can't come in a dress covered in, you know, bicycle handlebars, but Madeleine probably could. And you'd be like, fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what are they going to do? Fire her? She doesn't work for the royal family anymore, so.
Yeah, I feel like that's what we need.
This is going to be our last episode before we take a few weeks off. I know, very sad. I'm sure you're all crying. And we thought that the perfect thing to do would be to talk about what we can expect to see in 2023. And I'll start with Sweden, because we've just talked about them for quite a long time. I do think at some point we might get one more baby.
I think we're going to get another baby. I put that in my predictions that I've scheduled to come out. I have a baby planned.
I think we might get one more surprise baby in the next few years. But, you know, other than that, I think, you know, until Estelle comes of age and her cousins, we're probably not going to have any more. We're done with the wedding and baby thing, probably, possibly. But this year, or next year, 2023, in September, the big event is going to be Carl Gustaf's Jubilee. 50 years on the throne, which is also the same day that Prince Daniel turns 50, because fun fact, Prince Daniel was born on the same day that King Carl Gustaf took the throne, which is a remarkable twist of fate. I do feel sorry for Daniel a little bit because every big birthday he has or has had since he married in will be shared with the King's Jubilee. So no time for you, Daniel. But they've already released some of the things that are going to happen. So there's going to be a dinner in January. The King and Queen are going to make visits to all of the counties of Sweden throughout the year. And then the weekend itself, there's going to be a Te Deum, which is basically a church service. Changing of the guard at the Royal Palace, an anniversary dinner, and then a carriage procession from the King and Queen. And so as far as I can tell, I mean, I remember the 2013 one vaguely because they had a dance party at the palace and they invited like the public to come and dance at the palace. And Sylvia was out there in the courtyard dancing with random people. She is the dancing queen. So it was very fun last time. I think they tend to be quite low on royal visitors for Jubilees. But what I do hope to see is a lot of cute moments with the children.
I want to see Madeleine back in Sweden.
We don't get to see all of them together very often. So I think that's what I'm really looking forward to from the Jubilee, is kind of the potential for lots of really cute family moments with the children.
There was that period of time where every 6 months there was a wedding or a baby or a christening in Sweden, and I kind of took it for granted, and then when it kind of all came to a natural end, I was like, oh, I want another Swedish christening. Like, can't they christen someone again? But obviously we've seen the older ones interact a lot, but I mean, I barely know anything about Prince Julian. I need to see him in action. I need to see his personality shine.
You know, it would be nice to see them interacting more with the rest of the family, so I really hope they come back. I mean, who knows, really, at this point. I think they will,
at the very least, Madeleine will come back.
Yeah, for the weekend, for the Te Deum and things.
I mean, they did come back this summer, which gives me hope, because I kind of assumed they were done. They were like, yeah, we'll pop back the old weekend, but they came back for, like, the whole summer. So maybe they'll do the same thing, but just be like, sorry, American schools, we have to take September as well, because my dad's having a golden jubilee.
That's a pretty legitimate reason to miss school, isn't it? Staying in Scandinavia, we move to Denmark. I mean, this is not like a thing that's going to happen at a particular point in the year, but I am interested to see. So So episode 40 was all about the sort of family drama in the Danish royal family, particularly around Princess Marie and Prince Joachim. Since that episode, we've learned that they are going to be moving to the United States. They're going to be living in Washington, D.C. So this is not a specific event, but I will be interested to see how, if they can, kind of keep up the relationship with Denmark and how they're going to manage their duties. Because in France, they were geographically relatively close. There's a lot of connections between France and Denmark.
I am interested to see if we, like, are we going to see people like Nikolai and Felix doing more commercial work, like much more? Are they going to stay in Denmark? Are they going to go to America for their career? Marie and her husband don't actually do that many engagements. They are still a very integral part of the Danish royal family, like from the act in terms of the work they do, like it's still a big part of it. So I'm interested to see how that kind of goes on, because I kind of almost think they won't come back. I might put that in my predictions as well. I've got very exciting predictions coming up. I don't think they'll come back. So I'm very interested, because there's a big event happening in Denmark next year.
Yes, there is. So, well, I hope it's the same big event I've got written down. In October.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Prince Christian, who is the grandson of the Queen of Denmark, the son, oldest son of Crown Prince Frederick and Crown Princess Mary, will be turning 18. I don't think there has been any announcements about what's happening for that. So the only thing I had to work on was what happened for Frederick's birthday in 1986. And he had like a dinner with tiaras. He didn't wear one, sadly. So I don't think we'll get to see Christian in one. And at that event, there was a small royal contingent present, which was mostly like his godparents. But Christian does have amongst his godparents, Crown Princess Victoria, Crown Prince Haakon and Crown Princess Mette-Marit. So if only his godparents went, that's still pretty cool. So, but I don't know. That was 1986. Like, I don't know if they're going to do the same thing for Christian.
My initial thought was, oh, they'll have some kind of like dinner or gala. And then I was like, do they do that for boys? Or is that just a girl thing? For Margarita's jubilee, one of the events was a dinner with the family. It was like a private family dinner where they released, but then they released pictures because they were all fancy dressed and in tiaras. I kind of imagine something a bit like that, but with a few more people. You know, they did just go through quite a bit of controversy about Margarita not being a loving grandmother. You know,
yes.
That was the overriding opinion. So I wonder if a year later they might, especially if Marie and her family don't come back, whether they'll push the kind of happy family, lots of godparents angle, because it is very good PR if, you know, Christian's birthday is him surrounded by a happy, you know, his cousins, his godparents, his aunts, you know, that whole gang.
I think I remember there being a party for Nikolai's 18th. He's obviously in a different position, so it doesn't necessarily tell us much, but I'm sure they were on a boat. Yeah, they were on a boat.
Boatman.
And I don't remember if the Queen went, but I know everyone else went. So I expect some kind of party that has a public element that we get to see. I don't know whether that will be tiaras like it was in 1986. I don't know whether we'll have other royals there. But I also think Margarita is like, she will do what she wants to do. And she doesn't really care about what anybody else thinks.
Yeah.
So if she wants to have a big party for Christian's 18th, they will have a big party for Christian's 18th. At the very least, we can expect new photographs, because the Danish royal families love to give us new photographs for birthdays.
Yeah, and just for like general events. Like, oh, we breathed today. Have a new photograph in 40 hours.
I wonder if he'll do an interview like Ingrid Alexandra did.
Yeah, I'm thinking an interview, some kind of announcement about education or career. Mm-hmm. Or military, maybe.
I'd like to get to know him a bit more. Yeah. I actually think that would be more interesting to me than him being on a party on a boat, if that's what they do. So then Norway will complete the Scandinavian trifecta. So, I mean, there's a few things. So in July and in August, we have the 50th birthdays of Crown Prince Haakon and Crown Princess Mette-Marit. It's very convenient that they're so close together.
I know, they could do a special like midpoint between their birthday mega celebration.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, two big celebrations just like a month apart, which I feel like is slightly more inconvenient, but I would forgive them.
It's similar to Denmark in that we don't really know what to expect. again, Harold's 50th birthday was in 1987. So again, we can't really draw too many conclusions, but he did have a big birthday banquet that had royals from Denmark, Sweden, Luxembourg, and the UK, because they're closely related. So, you know, that'd be nice. And which, if they did that, I would like that, because we could get to see Ingrid, Alexandra, and a tiara again.
Yes.
But for their 40th, they actually did something quite different. They had a music festival, which the public was invited to. Crown Prince Haakon played guitar on the stage. Ingrid gave a speech. She was only 8 years old, but she gave a speech because she's a pro at speeches. Royal friends from like Denmark and Sweden and things who visited and attended the festival. So it was very casual, but they were still invited because they are friends. At the very least, again, we can expect new photographs, I think.
50 feels more important than... I've always been... find the whole 40 thing bizarre, because I swear being 40 was not a big birthday like 10 years ago. But... and I feel like an old person. Like, oh, it was never, well, not in my day. But I feel like 50, I mean, it feels like a bigger deal. I want to see as much of Haakon and Metamirit as we can, because I love them, with Ingrid being, you know, this up-and-coming star. I think, you know, I'd like to, and especially as she'll be an adult now, she can sort of do more and be more present. And I want to see it.
I mean, she can wear a tiara to a music festival. I would allow that. I also put down potentially a wedding. So Martha Louise, the king's daughter, is engaged to Shaman Derek. Shaman Derek Verrett. He has multiple names. They haven't confirmed a date, but I think following the announcement that Martha Louise is not allowed to use her royal status for any sort of commercial purposes and isn't allowed to even mention the members of the royal family on her sort of personal social media accounts, I wonder if that's going to impact like how much we get to see of the wedding.
It's a second wedding, which is always different, but also if they're clearly not wanting to promote a link between the king and Martha Louise and Shaman Jarrett beliefs, and having the king at their wedding is a massive promotion.
Yeah, and he's going to be there, he's her dad.
I mean, and on one hand, I really want to see the king and Gwyneth Paltrow in the same place. But, like, I don't know if I'm going to get that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to see it just to see, like, how wacky it'll be. I really don't know. I think they could go super traditional. I could also see them having, like, a nudist wedding. And it's officiated by Gwyneth Paltrow. And all of the guests get a special crystal that makes you happy. Like, I could see it being really wacky or them going really surprisingly traditional. I honestly can't tell with them.
I think, you know, we'll definitely get photos, whether they are officially released or released via Hello Magazine, I don't know. But I think we will definitely get photos.
You know, that's a potential and could be a very interesting episode if they do have some sort of public element to it. I just want to know what they're going to do, because I've never been to a Shaman wedding. Next up, we have the Netherlands. There's not a lot, really, that I expect to see that's exciting next year. I mean, it will be in April, the 10th anniversary of King Willem-Alexander taking the throne. But as far as I'm aware, they don't actually really start jubilees until 25. So we probably won't get like a big thing.
Yeah, they tend not to. They might do like a photo.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not expecting anything. I'm not expecting a photo, and I'm definitely not expecting anything more than that.
Yeah, no, me neither. Maybe just like an Instagram post with a picture from the day. Being like 10 years ago today. In June... Princess Alexia, who is one of the younger daughters of, well, she's the second daughter of the king and queen, will be turning 18. But again, she's not the heir. So I think we might get a new photo, and that's probably it.
And my note was, let Katharina Amalia be free. I just want her to be able to go out to uni. I think, like Ingrid, she's someone I want to know sort of how she's going to sort of progress into being a royal. And she's, you know, she turned down her allowance and was like, I'm going to do a year out. I'm going to go to uni. And she was quite clear about that. But I think that there's a lot of family events that she obviously attended this year. And I imagine she'll just get like a bigger and bigger role in those sort of going onwards, and preferably in also events with Tiara, state dinner. It's got to be a state dinner coming up she can go to.
The episode is called Not Bloody Likely, but I can't remember which episode number it is. And I can't find my phone at the moment, so just go and look at that one. It's not that long ago. And you'll find out all about the threat from the mafia.
It's 42.
SF42. Yeah, the threat against Amalia from the mafia, which is still wild. So I'd like to see that threat go away next year. And obviously for her, you know, it's not great to be living under that constant threat, but also so that we can see her more, very selfishly, because this is the exciting time where we start to learn more about who these people are and what their areas of interest are. She can deputize for the king and sort of go to council meetings and things with him. We're kind of in an era where there's less babies and less weddings. But the excitement, the flip side of that, is that a lot of the people who we've watched grow up are now becoming adults. And that's the exciting part of this phase of royal watching, is we're getting to see who they are. And, you know, the fact that she's cooped up in a house is limiting that somewhat.
Feels like the mafia didn't even think about me when they started making these decisions.
So selfish of the mafia. I think Belgium is very similar.
Yeah,
because they will also be celebrating the 10th anniversary of taking the throne in July. But again, I don't expect much. And my only really real thing was I'd like to see more of Princess Elizabeth, who is the heir to the throne in Belgium, who is around the same age as Amalia and Ingrid Alexandra. So my notes for Belgium were basically just like, take the Netherlands and change the names.
Yeah, it's like, I want to see more Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody has to say, I want to see more of this one person.
Yeah, but other than that, there's not like, I don't expect them to do a big gala or anything for the 10th anniversary. And nobody's exciting as having a birthday that I know of. And then last of the Benelux nations is Luxembourg. There will be something exciting there. So the main exciting thing is in April, Hereditary Grand Duke Guillaume and his wife Stephanie will be having their second baby, who will be the younger sibling of Prince Charles of Luxembourg, who is this podcast's unofficial mascot. If it's not King Harold, it's Prince Charles of Luxembourg. And I am so excited because we haven't really had a big baby circus for a while. You know, the excitement of a like, there's been some babies, but they're not like in the main line, or they're not it's been in COVID, so we can't really see anything. And so I'm really excited for the whole circus of like, is she in labor? There's a live stream from the hospital, the first new photographs to come out. What are they gonna call the baby? You know, all that excitement.
Yeah, I was thinking what I want to see, particularly because now we've seen so much of Charles, I'm just assuming that it will be extended to all future children. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm expecting to see Charles and his little sibling having hugs. I'm expecting to see when Charles's birthday, you know, pictures of them together, just like led outside, Charles like leaning into the pram. I'm expecting the whole work. Take them both to see some old people.
A royal baby can be very cute on their own, but then when they have the sibling dynamic, then that's a whole different thing that you've got.
You just live your life and it's like, surprise, Charles is out today doing one of his many engagements.
Yeah.
So I'm just expecting that to carry on, except like, Stephanie will be holding a tiny baby at the same time.
And I'd actually forgotten to write this down completely. I'm really sorry. But the other big event is the wedding. There will be we're having a royal baby and a royal wedding in 1 year. So who knew that Luxembourg was going to give us the excitement?
No, Luxembourg were like, right, none of you are doing anything.
Yeah.
We're going to have to do it. Looked at the other Benelux countries and we're like, fine, I'll carry us, shall I?
Yeah, again. Ugh. So Princess Alexandra, who is the one of the children of the Grand Duke and Duchess, she's the younger sister of Guillaume. She got engaged to Nicholas Baggery, and the wedding's going to take place in the spring. That's exciting because the royal weddings in Luxembourg, I mean, they usually wear Elie Saab.
Yeah, it's normally extravagant. Gowns are like 10 foot long, but it looks good, not like some other people with very long trains. Diana.
So I mean, we don't know too much about that either, but that is a very exciting thing to look out for. When did I say the baby was going to be born?
April, I think.
April. Oh, that's going to be interesting.
I know. I was like, is there going to be a very pregnant Stephanie, like a la Madeleine at Carl Philippe's wedding? I mean, I'm trying to think, are we going to get Amalia, Liam and Charles in the bridal party? we should at the very least get Charles. Because it's weird, because I was like, oh no, Alexandra, she's quite low down. She's like one of the younger ones. But then I was like, wait, Felix and Claire had a massive wedding and they're not heir to the throne. So I am expecting a full-blown mega event, because they do the church wedding and the registry office thing. So I'm excited. two-day event.
Even like Prince Louis, who married without permission to Tessie because they had an illegitimate child. It's a long story. But they, even that, we got to see photographs. You know, if that got press attention and we got to see the dress and all, and the royals went and all that, then I don't see why we can't have a big bonanza for Alexandra. Oh, that's, that almost rhymes.
Bonanza for Alexandra. That's a title put it in for her wedding episode.
Bonanza for Alexandra. So yeah, I think that leads us nicely into another baby.
Baby pancake.
In Monaco. So Louis de Crey and his wife Marie are having their first child. Well, not really. I'll explain that in a second. They're having a baby. And this will be the first grandchild for Princess Stephanie. So Stephanie is the daughter of Grace Kelly and Prince Rainier and the sister of Prince Albert, who's the current head of state for Monaco. So Louis and Marie are my two of my underrated faves because they have a dog called Pancake, which is firstly the best name for a dog ever, but also they treat the dog like a baby. They've posted photographs of his birthdays where he gets a cake and a hat. He was in their wedding with a little tux. He had a little tie thing on. So he is really like, you know, like a child. So that's why it's strange to say that they're having their first child, because really they're having their second child. It'll just have a more normal name.
I mean, I'd love it if their child was called like Waffles.
Waffles do great.
Breakfast item named children.
That would be fantastic. Yeah, I don't know exactly when we're going to have the baby. Well, we're not going to have it. They're going to have the baby. Again, I'm going to guess spring again. They're quite far down. They don't have titles, but they are sort of valued members of the family. So we could see something. And they have a very active social media presence. So we could see some sort of photographs of the baby with Pancake and whatnot. We might see royals at a christening in Monaco. I'm very excited to see what Pancake is like as a big brother.
Pancake is going to be the best brother.
So while I'm in that area, why don't we go to Spain?
Yes, let's go to Spain.
I think the big thing that I identified was in October, Princess Leonor, who is the heir to the throne, daughter of King Felipe and Queen Letizia, will be turning 18, which surprised me because in my head, she was like 12.
She's so much like, in my head, you've got like Amalia, Ingrid, Christian and Isabel as like twins, almost all with the same age. And then you've got like a massive like 10-year gap, and then you get to Leonor and Sophia, and it's not that far apart. It's like days.
Yeah, Leonor and Christian were both born in October. I think it'll be less of a extravaganza than Ingrid or Amalia or even Christian's will be in October, because I think for Felipe's 18th, he basically swore on the constitution at a big ceremony. There definitely wasn't like lots of royals visiting, so I think it's going to be very like professional.
We'll see, you know, the family of four and probably Queen Sophia,
yeah,
you know, in nice matching outfit, meeting people and signing things, and a nice photo of Leonor by herself and one with her and her dad.
It'll be like when she was what I can't remember what happened. She was made like the Order of the Golden Fleece. She was given the Order of the Golden Fleece, and there was a ceremony, and she did a speech, and it'll be like that. I mean, it's very important, probably more important than tiaras technically. She's basically saying she can take on the role of representing the king and kind of representing the nation. But I think especially because of the Spanish royal family, like, I know this, people might be surprised, but they are probably the most criticized royal family in Europe. And so they are very sensitive to anything that could rock the boat. And so I really don't think that we'll see even a photo of her with a tiara on. I just don't see it. Until she goes to a state banquet, I don't think we'll see a tiara.
It will be almost, it's not casual as in like jeans and t-shirt, but it will be very like pared back and like kind of just like you have an important meeting at work, but you're an 18-year-old girl.
I feel I know less about her than I know about a lot of the others. Like, I knew a bit about Ingrid Alexandra already, and I knew a bit about Amalia already, and I don't really know anything about Leonor. She always seems very composed. She's got a great relationship with her sister, but I don't know what she enjoys and what her view about the world is. And so this is the opportunity to see that. So if they do have a swearing on the constitution, I'm sure that'll be very important, and Letizia will probably cry. But I would like to see an interview maybe to accompany that so we get to know more about her.
At the very least, like a speech. But what I really want is an interview. And I think she's did a bit of work, particularly in the pandemic with Sophia on like with like reading things for children and be like, oh, we're just like you, kids at home. And I think she could do like an interview, not like with children, but with like young reporters or something. And then it would feel, I think it would be more, it would be better received than if she just was like, I don't know what's, all our magazine. I'm really fascinated by the kind of Leonor and Sophia's sort of transition into adult royals, because Spain, through kind of no fault of their own, lost their extraneous royals through a minor financial misdemeanors.
Yeah.
And they're still, you know, male preference primogeniture. So they're, even though there's no way, I mean, fingers crossed, that Leonor's suddenly going to be like, surprise, you're not heir to the throne anymore.
Yeah, yeah. New baby.
But I think Leonor and Sophia are in a weird position, because Sophia in particular being, you know, when she marries, is she going to like disappear from view? Like, I know that's a long way off. I'm not expecting tiny little Infanta Sophia to get married anytime soon. But I think because Spain is in such a weird state, I'm fascinated by them far more than I am by, say, you know, what's going to happen to Sverre Magnus growing up? Like, he's going to be fine.
Yeah, like, it feels almost like they need Sophia more than other royal families need that. Like, they can't have a Harry situation and they can't afford that, really, it feels like. So we'll go a bit left field and go with Jordan. I didn't expect Jordan to be delivering, but we're going to have a wedding, at least one.
At least one.
So the heir to the throne, Crown Prince Hussein, is engaged to Rajwa, who we still know almost nothing about. And Hussein's younger sister, Iman, also got engaged to her fiancé, Jamil. We know that Hussein and Rajwa will be marrying in the summer, because Rania let it slip at an engagement that they'll be marrying in the summer. We don't have a date for Iman, I would guess, after Hussein.
No, yeah, because Iman got engaged first.
Yeah.
But then as soon as Hussein got engaged, everyone was like, okay, we have the big one, the heir to the throne. Yeah, so I definitely think Iman's will be post that, maybe winter or even spring 2024.
So Jordan does tend to go extravagant based on the king and queen's wedding. It's really interesting if you look at the brides from Jordan's history, because it's always like very contemporary. So like the 70s, it was like loose fitting kind of boho wedding dress. For the 90s, it was like gigantic and kind of a bit tacky, but very extravagant. You know, it's so I feel like they wear things that are very contemporary, but it is a white wedding dress. So I don't know what Raj will wear. And I'm interested to learn about Muslim weddings because I don't know very much about them. But I don't think we'll see her in a tiara. Rania didn't wear a tiara.
I'm excited for Alexandra's wedding because I know what I'm going to expect.
Yeah.
But I'm more excited for the Jordan weddings because I don't know what I'm going to expect, because I don't know how public it will be. I don't know if Hussein's is going to be huge and then Iman's going to be tiny. I don't know if they're going to go sort of very traditionally Muslim, or if they're going to have more Western influences, or, you know, I don't know how sort of big or small it's going to be. And it fascinates me because I'm really interested to learn, and like it's so different than, I mean, I'm very sort of aware of Christian and Catholic weddings, and when I go to a civil service, I'm like, where's the praying? Where's the song? So I think a Muslim wedding is obviously different again, and I think I would just be really fascinated to see kind of what it's like, particularly in the context of it being a royal wedding and the heir to the throne in a country where they have power. Like, it's a really different sort of position than most royals.
Yeah, they can have an extravagant, expensive wedding, basically, because if anyone criticizes them, that won't last long. But yeah, like Rania and Abdullah, they rode through the streets in a car. So not a carriage, but in like a white classic car. You got pics of them cutting their gigantic wedding cake with a sword, which, I mean, the only reason I would ever want to get married is so I could cut a cake with a sword. And so I think as the heir, Hussein could potentially get something that's very extravagant like that. But, you know, it is, we really don't know what, you know, what does Rajwa want? I think based on the last royal wedding they had, it was mostly, in terms of attendance, mostly other Muslim royal families. And then like Sophia from Spain, because they're super close friends. I've heard a lot of people being like, oh, I bet William is going to go because he's really close friends with Hussein. It's like, I mean, they met twice, guys.
Yeah, like of all the Western royals I could see going, William's the most likely, but I don't think he's very likely.
So then last but not least is the UK. One thing I really want the Japanese state visit to be rescheduled.
Yes.
So that was supposed to happen in 2020 and it was cancelled, obviously, because there was this little thing called the COVID pandemic. But then they haven't rescheduled it and they had South Africa visit. But that would be lovely just because I love the Emperor and Empress of Japan and I prefer, no offence to republics, but I prefer royal visits from one monarchy to another. Fingers crossed.
I have some hope. I have optimism.
Yeah. But yes, the big thing, that was just, I had to get that out of the way because it was one thing that I wrote down. But the big thing is obviously the coronation in May.
Like, I can't quite get my head around if that's going to be an actual coronation. Like, that feels like something that, I mean, that happened a long time ago. It's going to happen again. Like, it's bizarre. Like, I know they happen, but, you know, we did our coronations episode where we talked about how most countries don't do coronations. They do enthronements or, you know, signing forms. And
episode 39.
Thank you. I am very desperate for Charles to give me a full-blown coronation. And I know we are in a cost of living crisis, but it's actually not going to make me any richer if Charles doesn't do it. So he might as well just do it. So
there's loads of things and conversations about it. And we don't actually have a ton of detail. We have heard recently that he is going to wear the crowns.
Yeah. I like the fact that you described it as it's been smuggled out of the tower. Like, you smuggled it. You did it. So you come up, it's not bad. I just imagine them sneaking in and like all black in the middle of the night and trying to sneak it out and they're like, we know you're doing it, you've signed the paperwork,
you told us about it, which I don't know if smugglers generally do.
They're not to announce press releases.
So we know that that's going to happen, but that's pretty much all I think we know. It is a difficult balance to strike because you don't want to seem out of touch. Britain is a very different society now and the British Empire doesn't exist. And, you know, it's very different now from what it was in 1952. The Commonwealth is a different thing. And it is just a different world. And so there will have to be changes that are made. And there are with every coronation, like 1952, it was televised, which is obviously not something that was possible at the coronation before. But you don't want to lose the magic. And I really just don't want it to be like just another church service that happens to have a crown.
As we all know, a lot of cons to the monarchy. Something that kind of sets them apart from republics is this massive history and this massive culture that is very unique to them. The British one has been, you know, been going for so long, for thousands of years, for at least 1,000 years. And it's so kind of sort of developed into what it is today. And it's one of those things where you don't get anywhere else. You know, you're not going to get it on, you know, a random Tuesday in Tesco's. It's a
completely, oh, I might support that.
more coronations in Tesco's. Like it's very unique. And even though, you know, it's, I think for us, it's not going to be once in a lifetime.
No.
Because Charles,
I hope it's not.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. It is a historic moment in itself. And I felt it was kind of like when the Queen died and we were watching that and it was like, well, you wouldn't get this exact thing with anything, in another country. And it felt very cultural and unique to Britain. And I think for a coronation, obviously it's going to be held in London, but he's going to be crowned as king of, you know, Britain and the UK and also Canada and Australia and, you know, Jamaica and Belize and all these other countries. And he's also head of the Commonwealth. So I'm really sort of, and the Commonwealth is so much bigger now. And so it is on a far more equal footing. And like, I'm really interested to see that kind of multicultural element that was missing at that last coronation in this one.
So yeah, I think there is an opportunity there for it to be made into something special without it being like letting go of those things that are consistent. It's a hard balance to strike, and we don't really know much about it, but I'm trusting in you, Charlie.
Yeah, I'm not envious of whoever's planning it, But I think I'm also really interested to sort of see what goes with it, because they were not expecting to plan a coronation after the Platinum Jubilee. Like, they did all the big, they did the, you know, the realms tour, the, you know, Commonwealth Jubilee tour sort of last year. They've just done one. Oh, this year it is still the same year, but they've just done one and they did the Platinum Jubilee celebrations. And then they kind of like, I want to know, Charles isn't a 26-year-old woman who can, you know, go on a 6-month tour for all of his, you know, is he going to stay in the UK and do the odd visit? Is he going to send, you know, like Anne and Sophie and Edward and William and Kate to these other countries? Like, what is the balance going to be for that? Because they do need, he does need to, within sort of a 12-month span of either becoming king or the coronation, do these visits to these countries that he is the king of. But at the same time, he's, what is he, 73-year-old man who, you know, is in good health, but that is tiring.
I think that's the interesting thing, really, is like, obviously the coronation is going to be exciting, and we are getting a bank holiday, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Yes. So that makes it doubly exciting, because I love a bank holiday. But the other sort of exciting thing, really, is that we've been used to the Queen for a while now, and she was a very old lady who couldn't travel in the same way. So we are suddenly going to be able to have outgoing state visits again. I don't really remember what that was like. So it's kind of like, it's opened up a whole new thing of like, Charles will be, even if he keeps lots of things exactly the same, he will be doing things differently to how we remember the Queen doing them, because he can go out and make all of these visits that she didn't make.
Yeah, it's little things like that, like seeing the outgoing state visits, kind of seeing, you know, it's a transition period. And I think all the other monarchies, no matter what way you look at them, aren't in a, they're, you know, they're just going to carry on doing what they're doing. But for the first time in 70 years, the British royal family can do it. Well, can't do anything, but like they can make these, they can make changes and do things differently. I don't think they're going to suddenly turn up and be like, okay, we're going to do one engagement a week each, and it's going to be 15 hours on that one day, that's it. Like, I don't think it's going to be anything mind-blowing, but I'm fascinating to see kind of the little changes that happen, and you know, the approaches, like we went like high quality photos from Buckingham Palace receptions, that's a new thing.
Yeah, because everything will be a first. Like, we've had our first state visit, we've had our first diplomatic reception, we're about to have our first Christmas. Next year we'll have our first Trooping the Colour. We'll have our first outgoing state visit, possibly. So every, you know, for the next year or two, lots of firsts will be happening. And I always find that exciting.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're going to have that middle of the year period where we're going to have, you know, the coronation, we're going to have Trooping, you know, George will turn 10. And it's going to be like, it's the same period of time as the Jubilee writ. But there's kind of like May, June, July, summer push, I think you'll get around that coronation. That is fascinating. I think particularly because, like you said, we don't know anything about it. Like this time last year, we knew quite a bit about the Jubilee. And I could be like, oh, this is going to happen. And I can predict some things, but I can't really predict, which is exciting.
So, thank you so much to everybody who joined us for this episode, but also for all of the episodes over the last year. We are going to be taking a well-deserved break. I'm not exactly sure when we'll come back, but it'll probably be early in January. In those 3 weeks, if you've got any downtime, why not catch up on the episodes you've missed, or listen back to your favorite ones, or rate us 5 stars, or follow us on social media. But yeah, but other than that, thank you very much. And it is a goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.